I want to talk to you about time. Time is one of the great focuses of contention in the battle between creation and evolution. I want to talk to you especially about two main ideas here that we're considering. One is, did life gradually develop on Earth over billions of years? And this is the normal, accepted scientific interpretation. And even some people who believe in God suggest, well, God took billions of years to develop the advanced forms of life that we have now. Then, in contrast to that, and very different, is the biblical model that God created all in 6 days just a few thousand years ago. So you've got these two basic ideas involved. And most implicit in that last model is the idea of the Genesis flood, that creation went bad. The earth was destroyed by this Genesis flood. And the fossil record harmonizes that story of creation and the flood together, so that we have the explanation for all those fossils out there. There's a significant amount of scientific data that favors the recent creation. We're talking about science here. Science repeatedly changes its views. New ideas come in and so on. So let's keep in mind what we're referring to in this discussion that we're having here. The first point I want to mention to you is erosion. Erosion is so fast that the continents should not have endured the long geologic ages. You're aware of what erosion is. Here's a river carrying a lot of sediment after a storm. How long can the continents endure this? Well, erosion is pretty slow, but you start talking about billions of years for the continents, and you are in deep trouble as far as the long geological ages are concerned. I know of a dozen studies where they have studied the output of all the rivers of the world on all the continents, measured how much is being poured into the oceans, and those studies suggest that you average those dozen studies and you get 24,000 million tons. What does that mean in terms of time? Well, if you convert that to the average height of the continents, which is 623 meters, it would take about 10 million years to erode the continents to sea level. Well, 10 million years is just a small fraction of time in the billions of years that are assumed for the evolutionary model. How come the continents are still here? This is data that seems to favor the creation model. The idea of erosion has been discussed for quite a number of years, and about 50 years ago, geologists became aware of this problem, and it's recognized in the scientific literature. Here's an extreme statement by Sparks in his book Geomorphology. He says, some of these rates are obviously staggering. The Yellow River could peneplain area with average height of that of Everest in 10 million years. Well, this river is faster than normal, but it tells you recognition of this. Hey, if you can erode Everest in 10 million years, how could the continents be billions of years old? You see the problem here. Right now, our erosion is a little bit fast. You have to correct for agriculture. But correcting for all this, you can probably safely say our continents should have been eroded 100 times in the proposed billions of years of geologic time. And we're still here, fortunately, and they haven't been all eroded away. Otherwise, we'd be underwater. Well, a corollary to this is, of course, hey, how long is it going to take to fill up the oceans? You've got all this material pouring into the oceans. How long is that going to take? Well, they should be full of sediments. The suggestion is made in a reference, again, regarding this, and it says here, If we next assume the present rate of erosion and exposed continent volumes to have been constant over, say, the past 1 billion years, then we would expect a staggering 30,000-meter thick layer of sediments to cover the seafloors today. And they go on to say, apparently we have erred badly in making our assumptions, and I would agree with that. If you take the biblical story into account and so on, instead of the long evolutionary, you don't have the problem. Now, you go out to seas and in the deep oceans, you have about 300 meters, which is 1% of what he's suggesting here we should have in 1 billion years. And the continents have probably been 2, 3 billion, 4 billion years, different ideas regarding how big they were and so on. But anyway, we still should have a tremendous amount of sediments out there. You have a picture there of the continents. You've got the oceans. There are trenches in the oceans. Sediment's supposed to have gone down in the trenches. You correct for that. It's not a real argument for it because you have only about 10 to 20% of the sediments produced by the river that go down into the trenches. And so your oceans, you can say, well, probably the oceans have been filled up at least 10 times in 2.5 billion years. And they are still here. Next, we have the presence of old flat surfaces that we find on the surface of the earth that how come they're still there because of all this erosion? You have a picture here of Kangaroo Island, Australia. And look carefully at the end of the red arrow, and you can see a straight line clear across the picture of the island. It's extremely flat, extremely thin, right above sea level there. And that surface is supposed to be 160 million years old. Now, in 160 million years, you would expect about 3 miles of vertical erosion. How come that surface, which is supposed to be 160 million years, is so flat if it is really that old? The answer is, of course, well, probably Kangaroo Island is not that old. That surface has been dated by radiometric dating. It's been dated by fossils. And you can see how extremely flat it is. It doesn't look like Kangaroo Island is that old. Data, again, that seems to favor a recent creation. And you can see from this picture how irregular erosion tends to be. Colorado River here eroded in various canyons and so on. And you go to the literature regarding this, and a very interesting statement by Twidale at the University of Adelaide, who says the survival of these paleoforms, he's talking here about Kangaroo Island, a number of other flat surfaces in Australia, and so on, survival of these paleoforms is in some degree an embarrassment to all the commonly accepted models of landscape development, except the biblical one. That solves the problem. But that is not commonly accepted in scientific interpretations right at present, but that's the data is there. Then we have flat gaps. Related to this, we talked about this very flat surface. You find these same flat surfaces in the rock layers. And you have gaps. And so we have these flat gaps that we're talking about here. Call them paraconformities. And they indicate little time. Just one illustration here. The Grand Canyon in Arizona. You can see the top arrow at the left goes right along the bottom of the whitish layer that you can see all the way across the picture. Now, that points to a gap, 6 million-year gap. Why do they say there's a 6 million-year gap there? Because about 150 miles south of there, you have a layer between the two layers where that the point of the arrow reaches. Right below the whitish layer, you have some reddish layers. You go 150 miles south, you got a layer, a thick layer, hundreds of feet thick, that is supposed to have taken 6 million years. And so when you come over here and you don't have that layer, there's a 6 million-year gap. And in 6 million years, according to our average rates of erosion, we would expect about 600 feet of erosion. Well, going a little further down in the Grand Canyon, the middle arrow there points at a 14 million year gap. 14 millimeters, you expect 1,400 feet of erosion. Very flat as you look across the whole canyon there. And that one is small compared to the lowest arrow, red arrow you see right there, pointing to a gap between very flat layers. That's 100 million years. So those of you familiar with the Jedi column, the whole Ordovician and Silurian is missing there. In 100 million years, you expect about 10,000 feet of erosion. That's twice the depth of the Grand Canyon. So we got these flat gaps in the layers, and those flat gaps talk about there being very little time over that geologic column. And this is something you find over the world, folks. We just give you three little examples here. It's a very severe challenge to the long geologic ages are these flat gaps in these layers. One geologist tried to study these and suggest an answer. He says, the origin of periconformity is uncertain. I certainly do not have a simple solution to this problem. And he suggested, well, maybe there were beaches. These are not wide beaches at these gaps. I mean, it takes tremendously wide. Some of these things are 400,000 square miles, these gaps. I mean, they're not local situations at all. Then we have carbon-14 that we find in older geologic layers. Now, most of you think of carbon-14, well, that's a dating method and so on, and it dates things quite old. The thing that you're probably not familiar with is that carbon-14 doesn't date very old dates. Why? Because carbon-14 does not last that long. It has a half-life 5,730 years, and you can use it for maybe up to 80,000, 90,000 maybe years and so on, but it can't go beyond that. But then you look in some older rocks, and you find that, hey, there's some carbon-14 there, and this should have been gone a long time ago. Here's some coal seams. You can see the red at the end of those red arrows to the right. And then those coal seams in the layers above, not these specific ones, but the same formation. This is a Black Hawk formation in Utah. You date some of these coal, you get dates, well, maybe 46,000 years. But the coal seam in this area is supposed to be 90 million years. Why is there carbon-14 left there? It should have disintegrated long ago. You probably couldn't detect it after 100,000 years. It's like being taken in a tour in a cave and being shown a candle and being told, hey, that candle has been burning for 5,000 years. And you say, well, tell me some more. I don't believe that story. And it's the same thing. The carbon-14 should be all gone. Why is it still there? The data seems to favor this. A lot of controversy about it, a lot of published papers on this. But the interesting thing is that we find so many of the layers tend to be somewhere in the 40, 60,000 year range. And these are layers that are usually in the million to hundreds of millions of years old. So, and they have this carbon-14. There's enough of those that this is interesting data that suggests, favors a recent creation where that carbon-14 should not be there. Some have suggested, well, it's there because there's been contamination. Some studies have been done on this, of course, because it's a topic of a lot of discussion. And Nadal here suggests, after a study, that it was not possible to reach lower carbon-14 levels through cleaning, indicating the contamination to be intrinsic to the sample. So far, no theory explaining the results has survived all the tests. And she worked on radiolarians and so on in the deep sea cores that gave carbon-14 that shouldn't be there and so on. And a bird in Australia got some very consistent results with charcoal and so on, suggesting that probably it's not contamination, that this represents a true date, at least a true level of carbon-14. Then another point is the good evidence that shows human activity is recent. You're all aware of ancient human activity. Here are some houses built by our Native Americans in Mesa Verde. It's supposed to be 1,200 years old. 1,280. Man tends to leave significant evidence of his activity. Here's a typical curve of the growth of the human population. And this tells us a little bit about this evidence. Follow the red line along the bottom. Starts at 1 million years at the left. This is the evolutionary interpretation. Starts at about 1 million years. Goes clear to the right at about the same level, just a slight growth. And then all of a sudden, 8,000 B.C., and this is a debated date, the line goes up almost vertically, and we're producing at a tremendous rate now, pushing 7 billion for the world population. The point I want to mention to you is that the data for man along that vertical line is very good. I'm talking to you about writing, ancient writing. I'm talking to you about history. I'm talking to you about pyramids, aqueducts, the many evidences of habitation that we have, which we showed you a picture of. So we have this contrast of that with very good data. Then along the horizontal line, a lot of very poor representation, a lot of debate. Every few months, a new idea about how man evolved and so on. In that region. So the contrast between these two figures, hey, maybe man has not been here that long. Maybe he was created just a few thousand years ago, and that's why we have this. And these do not represent ancestors. Those along the horizontal line do not represent ancestors to men. Well, lastly, the detrimental mutations are too abundant for humanity to have endured the long geologic ages. What you may not know, in the past two decades, especially the last decade, data has been coming out that mutations are much more common than we thought they were. And the figures are rather striking. Here's a picture of a baby. It happens to be my granddaughter. But according to the latest data we have, any new baby has about 100 mutations that the parents don't have. Now, mutations are quite detrimental, usually. So some are harmless. And mutations cause man to degenerate and so on. And so you'll understand three statements briefly from the scientific literature about this problem, which tell you, hey, man could not have been here very long. Here is from the book, the journal Nature, and the bottom line says, why aren't we extinct? This is one of the leading scientific journals of the world, as you understand. Here's another statement from the Journal of Theoretical Biology. Why have we not yet died 100 times over? See, we're not evolving. We're degenerating. They wonder how could we even survive? Another statement from the Journal of Genetics. It talks here about how could man keep its population going, at least on an even keel. Each female would need to produce 40 offspring for two to survive and maintain the population in constant sight. And and this is data based on about 10 years ago where we thought 3% of the genome was useful. And now we're maybe probably 30, 60, 90% of the genome. So the situation is, we're talking 10 to 30 times as more difficult as we thought it was. Well, just in closing, let me review what we've talked about. First point, the continents have not been eroded away. Second point, the oceans are not full of sediment. Third point, all flat surfaces should be gone. Fourth point, flat gaps, so those periconformities indicate a little time in the rock layers. Fifth point, short-lived carbon-14 should not be in old rocks. Sixth point, the good evidence shows that human activity is recent. And the seventh point, detrimental mutations are too abundant for humanity to endure long ages. And if we had more time, I could give you seven more points right here. These are numbers 8 to 14, but we don't have time for this, of course. But keep in mind, there's a lot more data along this line that also suggests that the long geologic ages pose some serious scientific problems. And in concluding, just let me make this statement. In spite of the strong scientific opinion that life evolved over billions of years, that's a standard interpretation, there is a significant amount of data that favors the recent creation described in the Bible. And especially remember this. One does not have to abandon science to believe the Bible. There is lots of data out there that supports the creation account. God bless you. Thank you.